Okay.
Okie dokie.
So just two.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Astrological Society Lecture 2019 Rekindling Hope with Janet Booth. After an onslaught of difficult planetary battles for the years, 2019 offers a somewhat brighter outlook. The cosmic weather isn't all sunny, but we seem to be between major storms. There are rays of hope. Learn when to lay low, when to strike while the iron is hot, and get Janet Planets 2019 on a page. Janet Booth has followed the stars for four decades. She is a past president of the Astrological Society of Connecticut. She's a writer, lecturer, and host of a monthly show, Looking Up, on West Hartford Community Television. Find out about her services and enjoy many free resources at Janet's website, astrologybooth.com.
Thank you. I'm used to having a big table where I spread out all my papers. And today they gave me this little teeny tiny baby table, which is also very, very, very heavy and hard to move. But I'm still going to move it to the middle because I'm a Libra and I like to be balanced and have things be symmetrical and be in the middle. So I labeled this lecture Rekindling Hope. Now, what does that sound like? It sounds like we've lost hope. Has there been an epidemic of hopelessness? I think in many circles, in many corners, there has. And if you follow much about the planets, you might know that there's a planet associated with hope. Does anybody know which one that is? It's the biggest! Jupiter! Jumping Jupiter! And you know, the old word for Jupiter, or a prior term, maybe from Greek, I don't know, maybe it's early Latin, Jove was another name for Jupiter. And it's the same root word as jovial, because Jupiter is the planet about humor. And humor and laughter really is the best medicine. So we need to laugh some more. And Jupiter has a cycle around the whole zodiac of 12 years. So it spends about 1 year in each sign. So when it comes home to the sign that it rules, called Sagittarius, that's when it should be most jovial and hopeful of all. And it just came in to Sagittarius on the 8th of November. Now, what happened on the 7th of November? 6th was the election, and by the 7th, we started seeing women were winning everywhere, 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 on both sides of the aisle. And there's no guys. There's one guy in the class today. Hi, Perry. We have a token guy. I don't want to be trashing guys, but I have to a little bit. They've been in charge for a long time, and it hasn't necessarily all gone that well. Now, years ago in prehistory, we guess there were matriarchs and matriarchies, and the women were in charge. I don't know how we slipped up and let the guys start doing things. But now it's hard to get the power back. And if you know anything about what they call the great ages, the age of Pisces and Aquarius and all this kind of stuff, it's a cycle of 26,000 years, and when you split that into the 12 signs, each cycle is about 2,160 years, approximately. But who's doing math? No, that's it. But we always say 2,000 years, but it's really, I'm Virgo rising, I'm fussy. 2160 is what the average comes out as. So we say now we're in the age of Pisces, or ending up the age of Pisces and going into the age of Aquarius, because these go backwards through the zodiac signs. So there's signs that we call masculine signs and signs that we call feminine signs. And it's just a way of talking about yin or yang kind of energy, like, you know, more assertive or more reflective or inward bound. So probably these matriarchies were maybe way long time ago, like age of Cancer, age of Taurus. Those are a couple of the feminine signs. So what happened, we got to the age of Aries, which started around, you know, the Peloponnesian Wars and the Greek era. They developed weaponry, and then they could kill each other better than ever before. You know, you didn't need to just pick up a big stick and clobber somebody over the head. Now you had a nice sharp sword and you run it through them. Okay, that's a guy thing. No offense, Perry. So 2160 years of that, and it came to the age of Pisces, right around when Jesus was living. And you know, the early Christians had their secret symbol. If you met somebody else and you wanted to know, were they a Christian and you were a Christian, you would draw a little symbol. You've seen it on people's cars like that. It's the fish. So Pisces, sign of the fish. Jesus, the avatar of the age of Pisces. You know, turn the other cheek. Oh, better to suffer than to run somebody through with a sword. Because they were coming out of the age of Aries, which was very violent. Well, violence hasn't gone away now, has it? So, Pisces, a feminine sign. What was supposed to happen? The women were supposed to be more in power. But the guys wouldn't give it up. So now we're coming 2,000-something years later after that. And we're going into the age of Aquarius, which is a masculine sign. They're still in charge. But time for things to be shared a little bit more evenly, we would hope. So don't know exactly when the age of Aquarius starts, because everybody kind of argues about what's that cusp. And I've probably talked about this with you guys before. But it's all based on where is the sun in relation to those starry constellations, the ram, the bull, the da-da-da. On the first day of spring is where we're measuring that. And it goes back a little bit more each year, a lower degree of the zodiac, called the precession of the equinox is the fancy $5 word for that. So there's the fish, and there's seven stars that are in the rope that ties the fish together in Pisces. And the first one of those is called Alpha Pisces. Pisces, whatever it is, and the final one is Omega. So you've heard these words before from the Bible, from the book of Revelation, that final book in the Bible. That's just some guy named John, not the Gospel John, some guy named John and his vision. Okay, but it talks about the Alpha at the beginning, the Omega at the end. The vernal or spring equinox point came to that Omega star, the final star of Pisces. Oh, you're going to love this one. It was the day that the Nazi Pope Benedict resigned, and lightning struck the Vatican. You'll see a picture of that sometimes. So isn't that kind of interesting if that's supposed to be kind of the end of the age of Pisces and Christianity as the dominating force in the world, that you have a pope that resigned, it was only the second time that ever happened in history, and lightning struck the Vatican? Now, in the stars, Pisces is big, Aquarius is big. There's like this overlap. You know the word brackish? When, like Connecticut River comes down in Old Saybrook to the Sound. There's some salt water, there's some fresh water. It mixes. It's not really fresh, it's not really salty. It's called brackish. We're in the brackish bracket now of switching over from the fish to, now a lot of people think it's a water sign, the sign of the water bearer. I thought about this one day. I said, why? Why is this the water bearer? I go, oh, because in the village you had the well, and everybody who was well went to the well and got their water. But if you weren't well enough to go to the well, the water bearer had to come to your house. So he was kind of like the town crier. He got around the neighborhood, and he knew all the news. He knew who was sick because he was bringing them their water. So Aquarius is a sign of connecting one another, community, and like groups, associations, organizations. That's what we see a lot with Aquarius. So we may find that people are, as time goes by, more and more collective consciousness, okay? Groupthink. If you watched Star Trek, it's not quite like the Borg. Anybody here watch the Star Trek Next Generation with Patrick Stewart? Yeah, the Borg was like, you know, they would like put this thing on your face and then your brain plugged into like the mindset of the whole community and you lost your individuality. It was very scary. They did get him out by the end of the episode because they always have a happy ending on Star Trek. So That's not what I came to talk about. Okay. Sharing, yes. Women, yes. Okay. We have a new planet since 2006, 5-6. Way out past Pluto, all the astronomers argued about it. You know, what they had to redefine what a planet is. So now we have Eris. It's named for Mars's kind of bitchy sister. Or let's say kick butt. Nobody's going to mess with me. I don't need no men. Like, she could reproduce, just like pop them out without any. Didn't need a man for that. Guess what? Nowadays, test tube babies. We haven't quite made an incubator that took the place of the woman, but no offense, Perry. We don't need the men for much anymore, and once we can clone, but once guys can figure out an incubation, you don't need the women. So, okay, it could go even. But yes, Eris is kind of like this strong, independent force. And it's woman energy, but men can express it as well. And its keywords are like chaos and discord and not such nice things. Like all those kids she popped out, they had horrible names like, you know, Toil and Trouble and things like that. Finally, she had one son. It was all girls. Then she had one son. His name was Oath. And that tells you about how important truth is to Eris. Okay. So Eris has like this 560-year orbit. Spends over 100 years of that in Aries, which it is now. And it went into Aries around the time women got the vote. I believe it was 1926. Women in America had the vote already, but that's around England where they got it. And it's not leaving until about 2048. That's how long. So we have this sort of women on the march. Well, we saw this a lot on January 21st, 2017, with the pink pussy hats down in Washington. But following the election and inauguration of our current president, women across America mobilized more than they even had to try to elect Hillary. So it's been kind of an interesting couple of years that we've had here. And the net result of that is what we saw with our election results. So prior to the election, I was trying to think, well, what's going to happen at this election? I didn't know would there be a blue wave or not, but I knew women were going to be really important in the whole process. And I looked to see, sometimes the stars and planets themselves give us like a literal signal. And Venus, a woman planet, right, had gone into that backwards mode we call retrograde. And what happens in that cycle is it's been evening star for months and months and months, and it's big, looks like a headlight of a plane coming at you after sunset, right, in the same place where the sun just went down. So we had that all very nice all summer. And then night after night, it's not quite as high in the sky as it was the night before at sunset. And then it, not at all, disappears. We call it going through the underworld. Well, actually what's happened is it's passed between the Earth and the sun, and then it comes up ahead of the sun in the morning, called the heliacal rise. It's helios, another Greek word for sun. So it rises ahead of the sun, and it's the closest to Earth in its cycle at that point, and the brightest thing in the sky. And do you know what used to be the nickname of, or one of the old Latin names for Venus when it rises so bright and close to us like that? In Latin, it was Lucifer, which the word luce is the root word of light. It meant the light bearer. Somehow then Lucifer got connected to the idea of the devil. But the myth of Lucifer was that he was one of the angels and he wanted to be as powerful as God, and that's why he got kicked out of heaven, I guess. But at any rate, the light bearer. The Mayans base a lot of their calendar stuff on Venus, and when the morning star would rise, they said that's when it's time to go to war. The evening star was the love goddess. The morning star was more like Eris, right? So here came on election day, Ceres, a small, almost planet. We called it an asteroid for many years until the astronomers decided to demote Pluto, at which time they had to promote Ceres, because Ceres is bigger than Pluto. It's between Mars and Jupiter. It's one of thousands of asteroids there. Maybe a planet used to be there that got hit and smashed to smithereens or something. And first discovered of all these little bodies, called an asteroid until they promoted it to dwarf planet, like Pluto now, like Eris. Anyway, Ceres, same root word as cereal. named for the goddess of harvest and fertility. Feminine, right? Kind of like a Gaia energy. Ceres, together with Venus, together with the moon, the other feminine of, I'll call it a planet, even though it's our satellite. Those three out of our regular 10 or 11 repertoire are the three that are all women related. They were all together, which that wouldn't happen all the time. Like Venus has a less than a year orbit, Ceres about 4 years or something, and the moon goes around once a month. So, you know, here they are, the three of them together, rising ahead of the sun. Sun represents leadership, male energy. In fact, you could even say, like, remember the Sun King? We kind of have a Sun King now. He's Leo rising, ruled by the sun. But at any rate, those three rose up ahead of the sun. And I said, oh, that's a symbol that here on Election Day, the women are on the rise. So from my standpoint, that's one of the things that gives me hope. But the real reason why I'm talking about this as rekindling hope is that we have this Jupiter in Sagittarius, our planet of hope, in the sign of hope for a year, came in 11-8, and it stays until December sometime of, I think it's 12-2 of 2019. So almost all of 2019 has this Jupiter in Sagittarius. And anybody just arriving, look around. There's handouts that were going around, and there's also a clipboard for signing up for my free blog and newsletter. Okay, so one thing I want to talk about is we can say in a generic way what things that Jupiter and Sagittarius should be good for. And then I want to go through the sign by sign and help you understand how you might use it in your own life or what department of your life it might be affecting you most strongly in. Okay, so some of our keywords for Jupiter and Sagittarius have to do with travel. Not just, you know, go down the street to the 7-Eleven, but multiple hours in your car or get on a plane or a train or a cruise ship, if you're lucky. Okay, so long-distance travel, people at a distance, communicating at a distance. Well, nowadays, that includes the internet, everything that we would call media, you know, publications of every sort, even the e-sort, newspapers, TV, radio, now blogs, all of that kind of stuff. Don't you hate that word blog? Couldn't they have come up with a better word than that? I know, it comes from web log, shortened to blog. And now there's video log, shortened to vlog. Anyway, I resisted becoming a blogger for a long time just because I didn't like the word. Okay. So, things at a distance. Higher education. Legal matters, legislation. All of these things are on the list of the keywords, probably most of them, if you've got that cheat sheet in your hands. So, there's something in astrology called houses. How many people have heard of that word before? When the moon is in the seventh house, all that means is it's setting. Okay, so you got a circle. I used to make a square chart. You got a horizon, it's a horizontal line. Don't you love it? Horizon, horizontal. Got a vertical line, it's called the meridian. You know, every day we got AM and PM. You know what that means? The sun's ante, before the meridian in the morning, post, past the meridian in the afternoon till midnight, and then it's anti again. That's where that comes from. Don't you feel smarter just knowing these little things? Okay, so you got four quadrants to everybody's chart. And it goes with directions, but we won't worry about that today. And then we split like pizza, 12 pieces of pizza pie sky. And that's what's called the houses. And everybody's got them in your chart, whether you know it or not. And they always start here at the eastern horizon, go counterclockwise, 1, 2, 3. Woohoo! 4, 5, 6, I'm writing sloppy, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Depending on what time of year you're born, what time of day you're born, is going to determine what sign you have associated with each one of these 12 pieces of pie. So when the sun, like now, it's in Scorpio, at sunrise, the sun is rising in Scorpio. So a baby who might have been born this morning with the sun rising in Scorpio would have Scorpio as the rising sign and at the first house. See how that goes? Okay. So if you know your birth time and you know your rising sign, you can apply this information to that because it's possibly, probably going to line up with one of the two houses so many from your rising sign. If you don't know that, just listen out for your sun sign, because there's also a way of doing what we call solar houses that even if you're not born at sunrise, we can just put the sun at the rising, and it has a validity for those 12 departments. Okay, and this is on the handout on the back side of the two-sided page. At the bottom, it's saying, where could we be hopeful this year? And all I did was give you a house number that goes with those different signs. So that's when you would probably look at your cheat sheet and say, oh, what does that house have something to do with? Okay. So if you're an Aries sun sign, or if you're Aries at this part of your chart, Sag is the ninth sign. It shows up in the ninth house. That's the home house for Sag. So it's just going to amplify everything we just talked about that are Jupiter and Sag qualities to start with. So for the Aries people, they're likely to have maybe more travel in their life in this coming year, or maybe they decide they want to go back to school, or maybe they're in school and they're having one of their best years in school. Or maybe it's time for them to be in touch with their legislators because they have an idea about a new law or something of that ilk. Okay, or maybe they're going to be using the media. And I usually think of this as the house of promotion as well, because you promote yourself by expanding your reach and telling your information far and wide. Okay, so if you have Taurus here, and we count around nine signs from Taurus to get to, that's eight signs from Taurus to get to Sag, it's going to end up in eighth house. So, you know, every time we go up one sign this way, we go down one house the other way. So for Taurus, it's in the eighth house. And this is inheritance, insurance, finances, investments. These are things where if you're overly hopeful about your investments, you better talk to somebody else who's got their feet really practically on the ground, because maybe you're going to go, oh, this sounds like great. If this stock is at its high point ever, it must be very popular. I'll buy it. It's like, and the next day it might go down, and the day after that might go down. And maybe I'll just insert a little, what do you call it? Segue? No. It's a sidelight. There's a word for that. Words don't always come when you want them. Scorpio goes with the eighth house generically, goes with Pluto generically. So where has Jupiter been for the past year before it came into its home sign of Sagittarius? It's been in Scorpio. And Scorpio has a very deep, emotional, intense, almost brooding side to it. You know, I usually look at that cusp between Scorpio and Sagittarius. It's like we're going from a heavy overcast day with lots of clouds and rain to breaking the clouds, sun streams through, then the clouds finally go and blue sky. It's almost like that kind of shift. And all of us collectively are feeling at least a little bit of that now with rekindling of our hope after we've been through this year of Scorpio. And the markets, they went nicely up for a while, and then they started going blah, 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 blah. When they started going blah, 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 that's actually when Jupiter went into Sag. It went in last month. No, earlier this month. Yeah, I forget. What did I say? The 8th? I think. Yeah, there you go. While Jupiter was in Scorpio, it was two signs away from Pluto, the ruler of Scorpio. Two signs is considered a good position relative to one another. And that, I think, helped bubble things up for this past year. And that's over now. And so I don't think we're going into major crash, but I think we've seen tops on a lot of things. We'll see. It's not my field of expertise. There are astrological, financial experts. I forget what they said. They all expect there's going to be a crash sometime. But I'll tell you, this is funny. All the astrologers are skipping right over 2019. Everybody wants to talk about 2020 because there's a bunch of big stuff going on in 2020. But it's like, don't forget about little 2019. We still have to live through that. But it's a milder year. You know, we had for years Uranus craziness, square Pluto, big change, throw that baby out with that bathwater. They sat in that 90-degree friction position from 2012 to 2015. There were seven times that 90 degrees was exact. That was tough times. And they've only started to get a little bit of breathing room on that. You know, Uranus is the faster one, but it takes 84 years to go around the whole zodiac. So only like this year do we start to get 5 degrees apart off of that 90 degrees. So 2019, we're really getting into 10 and more degrees off of that, thankfully. That's been not so good. Okay, so, what else I wrote here? Eighth house, this is for Tauruses. It's the other side, meaning beyond the veil. So you may find some people, especially if they're Tauruses who are usually very down-to-earth and practical, this year they want to go to a medium. Janet, who's a good medium that you would recommend to me? Oh, make sure it's somebody who's very good and doesn't cost the most, because that's what Tauruses want. Good value, not a high price. Okay. So Geminis, this is the opposite sign of Sagittarius, and if we put Gemini at the rising, opposite is at the setting, seventh house, and that's where Jupiter would be going through for Gemini now. That's the marriage relationship area. But it can be other forms of partnership, like business partnerships or teamwork and cooperation, that kind of energy. And that's going to be expanded. You know, this is the biggest planet, Jupiter, so it wants to make everything big, whatever it's touching or interacting with. So this is going to be a great year for Geminis or Gemini rising people for networking and cooperation. Although actually also when something's exactly across, it's like fencing, on guard, and can be your adversary. So it's supposed to be a position of diplomacy. So if you get adversarial people with you, you got to be extra diplomatic. So for Cancer and Cancer rising people, it's going to have Sagittarius is six signs past that. So it's coming into sixth house energy, which is service to others or people who perform service for you. So maybe some lucky Geminis this year are going to get a housekeeper or something like that. That won't be me. It's your coworkers. It's your relationships with your coworkers. If you're in a boss position, it's the people who report to you. It's not your boss. Your boss is up in the 10th house. Go straight to the top for that. But for Cancers, this might be a good year for job opportunities, taking on a second job if you need another one, since it's a Jupiter is related to education. It might be go get some more training so you can get a better job, things like that. It's also the house of health. Now, when Jupiter comes to your health house, you go, oh, maybe it's going to make my health look better. But remember, it rules growths. So it can be related to tumors. It can just be related to things like skin tags. Or, you know, there's lots of different kinds of growths, like, you know, goiter or something. Who wants that? But you have to watch out. It's not 100% perfect planet all the time. But it may be fine for you. Okay, so Leos will find that Sagittarius is in their fifth house. Well, that's the natural fifth house. It's the home place for Leo, for that sign. So whenever we've got a Sagittarius year, the Leos are happy as pigs and you know what. So creativity, children, being childlike, bringing out your inner child, all of that goes really good for Leos or Leo risings. It's about hobbies and things you just do for their own sake, not for any particular purpose. If you've got Virgo rising or you're a Virgo sun sign person, this Sagittarius hopefulness and expansion is in your fourth house. That's kind of like the ground that you live on. It's the bottom of the chart. It's your foundation. But that's the area that has to do with home and roots and family and where you came from and your ancestors. So maybe this year is going to be a great year for the Virgo people to do ancestry, you know, .com or the 23andMe and those kind of DNA stuff. Okay. Family relations. It's the place of the mother. If your mother's still alive, maybe you're going to spend more time with her because Jupiter, maybe she's going to have more demands or something like that. And if she's not around, maybe there's still some kind of benefit that she provides for you through things she taught you or people she knew. Do you know, my mom's in heaven, but she still sends me business from time to time. It is the weirdest thing. You know, people call me up and, oh yeah, I was a sorority sister with your mother, and she always used to tell me you should do my chart sometime, so would you? Yes. Funny things like that. Okay, so if you're Libra rising or a Libra sun sign, this is going to be a third house for you where Sag is, and that's your local area, community. So if we said the ninth house, Sag's real house, is far away, third house across from that, that's right here in town or right here in your county. So there might be more community involvement for you. Or this is also the area of lower education. Maybe you're going to have something to do with young school kids, besides just waiting for them to get off that bus when it comes and it puts that little stop sign up and you have to stop. Anyway, it's the house of siblings. So if you have some of those, maybe they'll be more involved in your life in the coming year. For people who are Scorpio sun or Scorpio rising, you love Sag because that's in your money house. It's in the second house. That's net worth, self-worth, your assets. Maybe something to do with financial partnering. I would say it would be a year in which you're feeling, even if your bank book doesn't say it, you're feeling comfortable about your finances, or you're feeling like there's great hope for them, or maybe you got a good hot stock tip and such like that. All right. So now if you are a Sagittarius rising or a Sagittarius sun sign, that is first house for you, because what did we say? We put that sign at the rising. So this is your year. It's your bumper crop for confidence and me first. Isn't there a new term now? Self first. Instead of selfish, self first. That's good. Okay. It's also about the body. So the same thing we said about the sixth house. Got to watch out for growth. And actually, I find that there is a tendency to put weight on when Jupiter comes through the first house. Conversely, Saturn, which is a planet of contraction, when it comes and visits your first house, which it'll be for about 2.5 or 3 years instead of just 1 year, that helps you contract or lose weight. So I usually tell people who have Jupiter coming to their first house, watch out, you might have a tendency to put on weight. You could choose to make that weight from muscle training, and then that burns fat. And Jupiter and Sag, they rule everything from the belt to the above the knee. So it's the hips, the belly, the butt, the thighs, our biggest muscles in our body because it's the biggest planet. And if you work those muscles a lot, it might keep you from putting weight on. So don't despair if you're Sag rising, which you wouldn't because Sag rise people, the glass is always way more than half full for them. Okay, if you're Capricorn, you're going to find that Sagittarius is the sign before your sign. So if you put Capricorn here, you've got Sag in the 12th house. That's an area of sort of behind the scenes where nobody really sees. It's kind of like in The Wizard of Oz when Toto comes, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It means a lot is happening on the inside for these people. And they feel like their growth is just very personal. It's not necessarily shown to others. It's an area of spirituality because it's connecting us up to people kind of in a global sense. This is the natural Pisces house, which if you think about the fish, we swim in a school of fish. You know, that one's ruled by Neptune, god of the ocean. Well, the ocean is big and we're all just like a little drop in the ocean. So this is an area where we feel that interconnectedness to everybody else. Now, I have to say this. Jupiter and Sagittarius are energies about everything being out in the open. And that 12th house is kind of the closet, or things are hidden behind the scenes. So one thing that we may be finding this year, and not just for people who are Capricorn or Capricorn rising, but that things that have been under wraps or hidden or not told to everybody by the media, you know, the spreading of the word far and wide, are going to come out. And just like Iris had that son named Oath, you know, truth will always come out. So that's one of the things I'm very hopeful for in 2019, is that we're going to find some answers to things that we've been curious about for a long time in many, many departments. Okay, so we said Capricorn, it's the 12th house. That's the area of our connection to the divine. So you may find that Capricorns, who are usually very down-to-earth, practical people, I mean, it's an earth sign, they're going, I've been having these dreams about my dead sister, or about, you know, I don't know, Jesus came to me in a dream and he told me I should be a vegetarian or whatever, I don't know. But I mean, you're going to find Capricorns that are having some strange experiences about their divinity in this coming year. That'll be fun. Keep your ears open for that. So if you're Aquarius rising or Aquarius sun sign, then Sagittarius falls back in your 11th house, which is great because that's the natural place for the sign of Aquarius. So they're going to have a wonderful year with their friends, with their organizations that they belong to. And it's called the place of hopes and wishes. Now, this is a very hopeful planet. So you put that in the place of your hopes and wishes, and you've got high hopes. Yep. Okay. So really good year for growing your group of friends for all the people that are Aquariuses. And last but not least, Pisces, we always make it last. It's the sign that suffers the most. They really do. Anyway, if you've got Pisces rising at that first house, or if you are a Pisces sun sign, then Sagittarius is at the top of your chart in the 10th house. And this is the area of reaching your pinnacle, making your mark in the world, how you're connected with others, or the part you play, you know, your sense of calling. And it has to do literally with your career or your boss. You know, maybe your boss is going to be really good to you and give you bonuses for you Pisces people who have suffered so long. And this is the place of your legacy or your reputation. So you're trying to increase the respect that you get from other people, and then maybe you won't have to suffer so much. Oh, isn't that nice? Okay. So I wanted to make sure I went through all of those because that's really what the lecture's supposed to be about. Now I'll tell you what some of the other drivel is that I wrote on this handout. I shouldn't say drivel. I'm a Virgo rising person. I drown in my own details if I don't watch out. So I don't even want to show you the note pages that this came from. But what I wanted to try to point out is that there are certain dates that are better than others, and certain time periods when, you know, you'd be happier like not start a business then, or get married then, or do something really important, or maybe even buy a house then. So when are they? Okay, if you're looking on page one and you see all this astro babble, blah 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 blah, okay, when you see words that have square in them or qua in them, square, semi-square, sesquiquadrate, bad, bad, bad. Those are the first three things there in the underlined part. One, two, three. Yeah. Then we get down to the sextile. That's two signs apart. Remember I told you those are good. Okay. And quintile, that's a fifth of the sky. Also very good. So we might like to do something. We go, oh, here comes Mars. It's making this thing called the quintile triangle. Cutie. And one of them is right near 426. But I said, nope, watch out. Go down here and see big bumps. Big bump coming. 427. So that's not your best time to use that talent triangle of the QT. You're better off if you got to do something that's really going to use your creativity and your talents and you want to bring in some luck. These other two date ranges are better. The August 4 to 16 or the November 27 to 12-3. August, I liked. I think it was one of the easier months. Oh yeah, look here. Easiest month, August. Toughest month. Oh no, runners up. 3 months that don't look too bad. August, November, December. Yay. Some years, sometimes it's hard to find a good month. Toughest month, July. Oh, I feel sorry for the Cancers too. Anybody a Cancer here? Okay. I always say there's 12 kinds of cancers. It all depends on what sign the moon is going through, because you're the moon child. So find out your moon, and then you can pretend to be a different sign. All right. Okay, because I put a little, you know, rundown sign by sign, but also it's astrobabble, and you'll go, what the hell does this mean? I'll come back to that in a minute. So the eclipses change signs about every year and a half. And right now we're into the Cancer-Capricorn sign pair. It's always two signs exactly across from each other. So that's where the heavy stuff is happening. And that those are who's having the hardest time or the most going on in their lives. Capricorn especially. Pluto's been there for years. Now Saturn's come in. It's in the second of about 3 years in that sign, and it's in charge of that sign. So this is important. And this is why all these other astrologers are going, oh, 2020, because that's when Saturn's going to come up and catch Pluto in Capricorn. That's a really big deal. And it probably means things like major changes in how things are being run. And we already have some of that coming in. Like, it's going to be very interesting when you go to do your taxes in 2019 for the year 2018, because we have that new law that's impacting everybody. So we're going to see, you know, is it better for you or not? We'll find out. I'm not in the 1%, so it's probably not better for me. But we'll see. But things along that line that are really big changes that affect a lot in our lives, more likely to come down in 2020 into 2021 than in 2019. I think 2019, we still have a little bit of sort of status quo. But of the tough things that are going on, three of them involve Neptune. And the one that doesn't still connects to the one that does involve Neptune. So to me, it's a very big Neptune year. We got this hope thing coming from Jupiter. But Neptune, ruler of Pisces, what did I say about Pisces? The sign that suffers. Okay, so we don't want to get too much into suffering, but it would be very easy to find a number of things to bitch and moan about with what's happening in 2019. Now, the biggest one of them, or let's say the most irritating one of them, has been going on since 2017, and it kind of clears up and finishes up in the first half of 2019 and then starts to leave us alone. And that's this Uranus and Neptune. Uranus is in charge of lightning. It means things that come out of the blue. Weird stuff. Unusual stuff. So some of what's going to be going on in 2019 that already started for a year and a half or more already is strange, confusing stuff. To me, one of the big things I am concerned about is truth. Come back to Oath, son of Eris. Because nobody's sure what is true anymore. There's a big blur. Maybe it's becoming more like a spectrum instead of a data point. Or, you know, when we stop believing in science, which is very much more Aquarius, an age of Aquarius, it's like there's this little throwback. We're trying to get into that age of Pisces. I mean, it's trying to get out of the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, but we keep getting pulled back into the Pisces crap. So be very careful in assessing what is told to you and where it comes from and what is truth, because that's our big question mark in 2019. So we do have Neptune in one very nice continuing connection, and that's the one two signs apart called sextile. And it's with Saturn, and Saturn likes reality. So I do think that this is a year when we're going to start having a better idea of what is true and what has been BS. Do you remember after the Parkland shootings and the kids came on and they had a big march in Washington, the March for Our Lives, and they came up to the podium and they were saying, my favorite one is Emma Gonzalez. She gets up there, she goes, I call BS on blah, 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 blah. I call BS on this. I call BS on that. And that, to me, is what some of this is about for 2019. It's a year for calling BS on BS. And you all know what BS stands for. Barnyard excrement of bovines. That's what my dad wrote. He wrote a letter to me. I was a freshman in college, and I wrote home something about, oh, this is bullshit, and blah, blah, blah. And he writes back, don't you use words like that, young lady. It's barnyard excrement of bovines. All right, Dad. Yeah. Okay. late in the year, we get one nice thing from Jupiter, and it only happens once. All these other things are happening like three times because of the back and forth. Well, most of them happen three times. Okay, so what we're going to watch out for. I mean, it says the toughest seasonal chart is summer. Is the whole summer going to be bad? No, because August is one of the best months. But there's certain things we might not like. Easiest season supposed to be winter, not this one. The next one. Okay. Now, this is interesting. Mars goes around in 2 years. So it doesn't come into its home sign of Aries every year. But it's going to for 2019. And it starts on New Year's Eve. And it goes to Valentine's Day. And Mars has its strongest Marsiness in the sign of Aries, which is very initiating. Let's get something done. It's a do-it kind of sign. So if you want to do something important in 2019, you get a jump on it right away, because we have no planets retrograde for the whole month of February, most of January, and I think maybe it was a little bit into March, not much. Okay, so the 2019 on a page, and if you want to tell all your friends about this, it's a free downloadable PDF at astrologybooth.com in the beginner's topics of the study booth. And it comes with a companion page that explains what's on here a little bit. And that one is where I wrote like a summary of like, oh, when are no planets retrograde? 111 to 34, 329 to 48. So you can kind of see some of that right here. It's like, you know, here's February, no black bars. Nice. January, a little hairy maybe because we got eclipses going, and that's usually pretty intense energy. However, if you wanted to say, what gives you more oomph to really get something going, it's a new moon, and more so than any other kind of plain vanilla new moon, an eclipse new moon. We have one on the 5th of January, and it's in Capricorn, which is a real plan, execute your plan kind of sign. And I don't think it's too far from Jupiter. Let me just take a peek. I told you, this is not a big enough table for me. Eclipse, January. Oh no, Jupiter's still in Sagittarius. It's between Saturn and Pluto, which I told you are both in Capricorn. Well, Saturn is get things done, plan things out. Pluto's make a change or collaborate, bring funds together from multiple sources. So that is a pretty good month to get something new going, like for businesses and things like that. Yes. Okay. The bumpy parts. If you look at nothing else on this page and don't even understand what the astro jargon means, at least you can see these dates. End of April into early May. Sorry. And if that's your birthday, you know, whatever's going on at your birthday kind of carries through for the following year. So it's a precarious year for those Tauruses. What sign did we say, or what house did we say Taurus had their Sag in? Oh, it's in their credit, investment, taxes, insurance, inheritance. Those people better make out a will. No, not that they're going to die, but everybody should have a will. It's ugly if you ever see people that die and they don't have that. Okay, so when we see things like Mars activating something with Uranus in it, those are accident potentials. This here, so many people go on vacation the July 4th week. It's like not good this year. Do your vacation a different time. Going to be a lot more accident potential on the roads or things like that. You can have accidents anywhere. They can happen at home even if you don't leave the house. I know that, but be extra careful. And then, oh yeah, when something's active at a full moon, it kind of usually amplifies it. So this middle of September, another tough point. Little bumps, not as big as the big bumps. Little, you know, they're still bumps. When I say bump, I just kind of mean like the energy's like, can't spell that, so I said bump. Okay, that full moon, May 18th, not so good. And then a June full moon. Okay, so not that all full moons are bad. Oh, good, we have time for this. This is so cool. Okay, So there's something in astrology that's called geodetic equivalence. What they did basically was they take the 360 degrees of longitude of the world and they assign it to the 360 degrees of the zodiac. So, God save the Queen, Greenwich, zero Aries, or Greenwich, zero longitude, right? East, yeah. That's prime meridian, they call it, or something like that. Anyway, this is a map I bought at the astrology conference in May, and it's got the whole world, and it's sliced into 12 strips that are the zodiacs, the signs of the zodiac, okay? So they start Aries at England. Where are you, England? Here. No, that's Iceland. Oh, England, this one. Thank you, Tilly. Pisces, they also serve. They don't just suffer. So, this is England. From here, Aries. This way, Pisces. Okay? So we've had Chiron, a minor asteroid, I would like to call it a planet. It's been going through Pisces. In February, I think it's the 18th or the 19th, around there, it's going to shift to Aries. It had been in Aries a little bit this year, and it went back into Pisces. But that means it's been in Pisces for years. It's slow. What's been going on in England? The Brexit mess. Mess. They are in such chaos. And they are part of 29 degrees, the last degree of the zodiac, which is the hardest of the zodiac, maybe the most suffering. And when we see it goes into Aries, there's not much England left on that side of the line from Greenwich. So pretty soon this Chiron, which is nicknamed the wounded healer, or it exposes what are weak links so that they can be shored up. And I think we're either going to get a resolution to it, or my guess is because Chiron came back in by retrograde, maybe they're going to reverse their decision. They might have another vote and decide to stay in the EU. Won't that be interesting? So then when we come over here to Taurus, this is the year that Uranus, that crazy energy, is leaving 7 years of going through Aries, and it's coming into Taurus. And what's going to be over here in Taurus? We got Turkey, we got the whole Middle East, we got Saudi Arabia, big problem, Iran, Moscow. This is a bad sector, and that's 7 years starting in 2019. So I think there's going to be some conflicts or difficulties in that next 7 years in that part of the world. And that's not a really hard prediction to make because, you know, how things are going.
Never been easy.
Never been easy. That's right. And this I thought is interesting too. Washington is in the Capricorn slice, and we said that Saturn is now in Capricorn for about 2.5 to 3 years, and the degree for Washington, D.C. is 17. And that is, of course, Pluto came through here in 2016 in the spring around March to May when the nomination was pretty much sealed for Donald Trump, and it came back to that degree at inauguration time in January of 2017. So that was Pluto. And when Saturn comes into that degree, I think there's going to be some kind of reckoning with what preceded it. Like Saturn is the planet about laws, the rule of law, that nobody is above it. And when we see Saturn get to the 17 degree of Capricorn, which I listed the dates on that at the bottom of page one on your two-sided handout, and it comes up February to March of 2019 and November of 2019. So pretty interesting stuff, and we'll just leave this out in case anybody like take a look at that. Very nice map. Paid $25 for that very nice map. Because it's easier to look at that than to look in your atlas and try to figure out which signs and like multiples of 30 degrees and blah, blah, blah. So now that kind of gives me a little bit of hope to think that the rectification of Saturn, the karma planet, is going to come to our capital, and we'll see what happens with that. So we got 5 minutes left. There's no way I'm going through this whole list, but some of the stuff that's on this list is also explained well. It's explained in astro jargon. What do we most need to know? if it's a strong Neptune year, Neptune is very much about your own third eye, your connection to your God, your guides, your beliefs, what you want to envision. It gives you almost like extra power for trying to manifest your intentions. Now, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Bert Piedmont, who's one of our vendors up here. She sometimes talks, and she writes the Mayan calendars. Hers is just going to be an e-book this year, no more print. But interesting stuff. And in the Mayan calendar, there's a section, I don't know, how long does it go? 20 days times maybe it's 13 times 20? I forget. It's a few months anyway. That's called the intention setting side of the calendar. And then it flips to the manifestation side. So we're getting near the end of the intention setting, and there's only two more of the major, what called portal days, or the, you know, when the kind of energy's open where you can really get your prayers up there. And one of them is Wednesday, this coming week, the Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. And then I think it'll be 19 days after that, and that's the last one for months, and then it goes over to, you know, you're supposed to get your manifestation of what prayers and intentions you do up there. So if you would remember that and try to use your third eye and set out some good intentions while you're making your turkey or your stuffing or your side dish or whatever you do for Thanksgiving. But when you're thinking about your Thanksgiving prayers, it might still even work on the day after, on Thanksgiving, but better the day before. And part of the business about rekindling hope, it comes from within you. And it comes from seeing that there can be a better way, or that you can do better, or that things will be Saturn. It metes out punishment. It also gives the rewards. It's the karma planet. And it says if you do good, you're going to get good. If you don't do good, you're going to get what's coming to you. And I think that that gives me some hope, too, that that's always operating. And you can break man's laws all day long. You can't break the heavenly laws. You can't get away with breaking Saturn's law. So with that, go forth and rekindle your hope. Thank you. Thank you.